Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 313 for comics originally released on August 7th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Legends of the Dark Knight number 11. Now, this is one of their digital first titles. This recaps, reprints, I guess, I think three of the installments of the digital releases into this. But I gotta say, the production team did a really nice job on this. If I didn't know that it was originally released digitally, there was nothing about the way it was presented that kind of screamed out at me that it was. And there have been a few where they'll do a very clear top half, bottom half, and it's like, oh, well, that was a bad paste job. The story here, they used a storytelling device from the 1950 Japanese film Rashomon by Akira Kurosawa, which basically tells a single story and the events of it from different perspectives. And in this case, we got it from three different perspectives. That of kind of the civilian bystanders, that of the villain, which in this case was Calendar Man, and then finally from Batman's perspective. And I kind of felt that version was kind of, at least in my opinion, the truth, if you know what I mean, whereas the others were a bit more colored of a perspective. What were your thoughts on the story and the storytelling device?
I think it makes a lot of sense. Because it is collecting three digital firsts, to have three separate stories combined into a third. That kind of was kind of cool. I like that. I've seen this device before, not in the Kurosawa thing, but in other mediums, and it usually works. The story as a whole for me was a Batman light story. It's somewhere between Batman 66 camp and the broodiness of the current New 52 Batman. So it was a solid story, but much lighter than what I've been reading, and that does not necessarily bad. I really enjoyed Calendar Man's version. It was so biased that It was hilariously biased, and I just loved his interpretation of what occurred in the events that occurred and how it unfolded. And I know people like that their interpretation of events, of course, always paints them in the best light. And that was very funny, and I enjoyed that very much.
Well, and it was well told, because in his mind, he's just an educator trying to you know, educate the masses. He's followed the rules. He's done everything right. And if there are problems, it's not his fault. There are obviously people could have stopped him if this was a problem or something. It was.
Well, he had all the paperwork he needed.
Yeah,
there are public employees that have signed papers that said he could do this. So obviously, if they're employed by the government,
it must be okay.
It's legitimate.
Yeah, that was a well-done take in terms of selling his mindset without being kind of heavy-handed or over-the-top or something. It was very believable that he might actually be either truly believing it or at least trying to sell that story as his kind of get-out-of-jail-free card. I'm curious how this would have read for somebody who got it digitally, you know, in each of three different weeks. Because would they have felt the second week, wait, didn't I just read this last week? And by the third week, oh, now I get it?
Yeah. I don't think it would work as well. You're right. One thing I do think that they've succeeded with this title is if you walk in off the street to a comic book shop and this is on the shelf and you pick this Batman book, you're going to be in good shape. Yeah. You're going to get a nice, tidy story. Without a lot of baggage that you don't know, if this is indicator of what the series is like, and I think it is.
I think it is, yeah.
And it's going to be buttoned up at the end, and you're going to leave satisfied, and maybe coming back. So this is something a comic shop owner should be pushing new people that are interested in the Bat family of books, and oh, there's so many. What should I pick? They should be handing them this book. as their intro book and maybe not something else.
Have you read the other 10 issues of this?
No.
Okay, so this is the first one you've read?
Yeah.
Okay. I would say this is reasonably representative. Obviously, each of the thirds retelling the same story from different perspectives, that's unique to this issue.
Yeah.
But I agree entirely. This is a really accessible one. It's pretty much a done-in-one every time. Sometimes you get three short stories, depending how the split goes. And I think you're right that this is something that's an easy sampling title, whereas, you know, right now with, like, the Year Zero stuff or Zero Year, whichever it is, that, I think, for a lot of readers might be more of an investment than they want to make into a Batman story right now.
Yeah, so. I agree completely, yeah. This was quality Batman story, and even though we have plenty of titles to choose from, this is stronger than some of them. So I like it a lot better than some of the other titles that are out there. I enjoyed the story a lot. And like I said, if this is indicative of the series as a whole, I should continue to read this and get my Batman in this style of storytelling, because I enjoy this a lot.
I definitely recommend this title. I've been really impressed with what DC's been doing on the digital side, and the fact they've been coming out with this stuff, you know, like clockwork for about a year now, I think, with this title, digitally. You know, they've got it down to a fairly well-oiled machine, and they're continually telling good stories. There was an aspect to the art here in a few places that felt a little stiff, and there are a couple of places where if I didn't know better, and I don't know better, I'm wondering if this was done using some digital tools, specifically Poser and possibly Manga Studio, because some of the poses feel like something that would be very easy to get out of Poser and then kind of drawn over.
Yeah, it does. It very much looks like that. Or someone has a little figure that they can pose in a variety of distorted ways and do some kind of photorealistic sketch of that. You know, yeah, it does look very like you're catching it like the split second of an action. A beat before or a beat after. It seems a little awkward.
Well, it's almost that, like, Uncanny Valley sort of a thing, where it's realistic, but a little almost too realistic and not realistic enough at the same time. Like you said, just that split second off or whatever.
Yeah, I can't tell you why, because it's competently drawn. It's just a little plastic.
Yeah, plastic. And a little lifeless, but like you said, it's well drawn. It tells the story well. I'm not trying to slam the artist at all. This
right,
is just
right.
Something that, you know, again, if I were not as familiar with a couple of these tools as I am, I might not have even picked up on it. And really, at first, I did not. And there are other pages where it doesn't look that way. Well, actually, with the interrogation or whatever of Calendar Man, the detective looks more like it was done that way than Calendar Man. He looks more like it was just kind of, I don't say free-handed, but you know what I mean.
Right.
And again, it makes for it's a good art style overall. There are a few places where I think this artist, Omar Francia, or I'm butchering the name and I apologize that I'm bad with names.
Maybe Francia.
Francia, we'll go with that. Solid artist doing a really good job. Obviously, there's, you know, like with any artist, a definite room to grow. And I think if this guy gets a just ever so slightly more polish on his style, he could definitely be an A-list artist in the future.
Mm-hmm.
He shows a lot of potential, and it's really well done here. I did find it funny to see Calendar Man, given his current use over in the backup features with Channel 52. But overall, I really enjoyed this. To me, it was a solid 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I have to give it a 4 out of 5 as well. I guess it is kind of it's a very small story. If I have a qualm with it, it is a small story, and kind of because of the way it's told in the three chunks, there's not much that happens, and it's just told in a variety of viewpoints. So, I'm anxious to see the next one, that is a complete story that's not, broken into three this way, and just to see how that compares. But I still think this was great. And I would definitely recommend it, and I'm going to read the next one for sure.
I you definitely should, and check some of the early ones out, because, I mean, I think you're right that by retelling the same events, different perspectives, but really the same story three times, You didn't get as much story in here as the page count really allows for.
Right.
But typically, because it's still told in thirds, in sometimes fairly seamless thirds, but it meant that each third has enough story beats in it to be a digital installment viably. So typically, I think, in the 40 pages you get here, you get a lot more content than you would get if it was just a 40-page book that wasn't serialized digitally in thirds.
Yeah, I agree. And how does this stack up to the old Legends of the Dark Knight? I've flipped through a few of those, that series that ran for 100 issues or so, a couple hundred issues or so. Well, how does this compare?
Well, it's a little hard to compare because they're doing very similar yet very different, similar things in very different ways, I guess would be the way to put it. Both are telling kind of quasi-in, quasi-out-of-continuity Batman stories, but there they would very much do like a 5-issue arc or short as maybe a 3-issue arc. Whereas here, you get, you know, the longest a story tends to be is an issue. Sometimes you get 2 or 3 stories per issue. So the scope of the stories is different. But thematically, approach-wise, etc., I think it's, you know, a very fair reuse of the title. And I think if you like the sort of things they're doing here, but man, wish they would just spend more time and do a little more in depth, I would recommend checking out that previous Legends of the Dark Knight title too.
Yeah, cool.
There were a couple of things there that were just really well done. There are a few others, and not so much. The previous version was more like kind of the Batman Confidentials title they did a couple of years back. But I would just say a little higher quality, because Batman Confidentials, all the Confidential titles, always felt like they were just kind of inventory stories.
I have about 100, 150 of the old Legend series, the old Shadow of the Bat series, and like Batman Chronicles, a bunch of runs of those, and I've just been putting off reading those. They're just sitting in a short box here. But this kind of kindles my interest in checking them out. You know, these old stories, you know, might be well done.
Well, there was a lot of things that creators could do when all they had to do was basically go in, tell a 5-issue story, go out, and they're done. They don't have to worry about the, you know, how is their run gonna work, or, you know, any of that bigger picture type stuff. And they were able to play a little fast and loose with just kind of, he's Batman, and you know what that means, and they could sometimes fudge. Is he a high-tech Batman, or is he more just a detective with not many tools and toys, or is he a fighter? You know, what take on Batman could shift a bit from story to story. So there's a lot of fun stuff they did in really all of those titles.
Yeah.
So you should definitely find the time to read them. It's well worth it.
Another sick day.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel title?
Sure.
This is All New X-Men number 15. Now, I read number 14 of this title right before reading this. I mean, literally, right before. And we've talked a little about how sometimes things read better in trade, better in issues, or whatever. This is one where I think I would have liked the art better if I had read the previous issue a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, because it was going from Stuart Immonen art, which is a much more kind of photorealistic style, to this style. And the artist here did a fine job, but it was a more anime-influenced, maybe, would be the way to say it. It's David LaFuente.
A little more cartoony, yeah.
Yeah, cartoony. And again, not in a bad way, but stylistically, fairly noticeable shift from issue to issue. And this issue is more or less, I'm going to say, kind of an epilogue to the previous arc and a bridge issue between this and the next arc that's about to start up.
Yeah, I had to go from 8 to 15 to get caught up. And this was my, you know, knowing that we were going to review 15, that was my inspiration to get off my butt and read those issues. But I really didn't need to, because this issue could have stood alone on its own. This was totally different than the 8 through 14. And but I thought it was really pretty interesting. I like the young group of X-Men a lot. I think that's a spinoff, you know. They've got Young Avengers, why not Young X-Men? I think they might have something there. It was kind of a small story, another small story. I like some of the touches between Beast and Jean Grey. That was really nice. And all in all, it was pretty solid. For some reason, it seems like all of the issues that I read had some great stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
But there were long spaces in between the great things that were in those issues, and that I thought, boy, this conversation's taking forever, or boy, he's saying the same thing over and over again. And then there'd be something really neat and really great, and then there'd be an awesome little story beat, and then boy, it would just take forever to get where it was going. And that was annoying in a row like that, to go from 8 to 14 and see that stuff over and over and over again. That was very annoying. But
this is Brian Michael Bendis, so I think you kind of have to expect that.
Yeah, and maybe that's why I hadn't read it for a while. I had, had some fatigue there and just set them aside and maybe forgot. or hoped it was different. But this was a unique story, nothing like the ones previously done in both direction and art. It was a nice departure, but not a good issue to lead into Battle for the Atom.
I don't know that it was so much meant to be. Well, obviously it should have been a good issue to lead into Battle of the Atom, since that's what's next. But I think it was meant to be kind of a bridge issue between the two arcs. And I thought this was really heavy on the soap opera side of the whole bringing the original X-Men from the past into the present.
And yes, it did have some soap opera elements in there.
Well, compared to the heavy action stuff we just had.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very different tone and style. And again, not in a bad way. It was just in a shifting gears, breather issue kind of a way. But I kind of split the thing into three categories with this issue. Some of it I thought was really interesting, kind of the difference in how mutants are seen now versus how they were seen then, and how some of the X-Men are having to readjust their thinking based on that. Some of it, frankly, felt a little forced, and I'm going to put the Marvel Girl, Jean Grey, Beast stuff in there. I liked it, but it seemed to come out of nowhere from my perspective. Granted, it's also been ages since I've really read the early X-Men stuff where those two were hanging around, from the period that Jean Grey was pulled from at this point. And frankly, I thought some of it was just a bit too cryptic, and I'm going to go with the Jean Grey, Rachel Summers stuff, Rachel Grey, actually, where those two interact a time or two.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because is that her daughter, I guess?
Sort of.
So she's...
It's not a short story. She is kind of sort of the sister of sorts to Cable, but not quite. She is the child, I think, of Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers. It may be Jean Grey and Scott Summers from an alternate future, kind of the Days of X-Men Past or Days of Future Past kind of stuff. I forget all the details because when you try to act, she's one of the Summers clan, and when you try to draw out their family tree, the time travel gets involved, the who was whose clone and not quite sibling or stepson or whatever. It's convoluted. Yet you look here,
seems like they're really closely related because of the awkwardness of the meetings.
Well, they're the same height. They've got very similar facial features, the way they're depicted here. I could have told you that Rachel is literally a clone of Jean Grey, and I think you'd have bought it.
Yeah.
Frankly, I always thought Rachel was a little bit older than the time period from which this, the Jean Grey was at that point or whatever. Time travel's hard to describe this stuff. This Jean Grey seems to be 17-ish.
Yeah.
And I had always thought, perhaps incorrectly, that Rachel was another, 5-6 years older at least.
Oh, they're all 14, remember?
Yeah, apparently. So there was some stuff going on with those two that was more implied than I took out of it, I think. So that part fell a little flat for me.
Yeah, I just felt that there was some backstory that I did not know from early X-Men canon.
Well, I couldn't tell when the two kind of psyched each other psychically, tried to get... Did they block each other? Did they get each other's life stories? Did they just not know how to deal with it? There are so many ways you could read the scenes there that I felt it failed to tell a story.
Right.
In that regard. For that part. Now, granted, that was a minor part of this issue. I also found it a little funny, and I'm surprised this really hadn't bothered me before, but particularly given, you know, what happened in Age of Ultron with the whole breaking of the space-time continuum, there are, like, zero time anomalies to be had in this title at all. I mean, no memory issues for the current-day versions based on what's happening with the younger versions, you know, no physical changes due to what's happening with the younger versions and stuff. I could have seen that potentially with the Beast, even. You know, and it almost implies these kids could be from a parallel timeline and not the quote-unquote true past of the 616 mainstream Marvel Universe. Now, whether that comes to pass or not, who knows, who cares? No matter which way they go, they could always change their mind later. This did some fun stuff with the character development, both of the original X-Men pulled into the present day, and with the present day X-Men and how the two sets interact. You know, it's a fun title. It's a good title. Is it decompressed? Yes. Was there a ton of story in plot progression in this issue? No, not really. But again, I kind of expect that. Would I have rather had Stuart Immonen in art? Yeah, I like that style better. Did this guy do a good job? Certainly.
The seven issues I read before this to lead up would have made a nice two or three issue arc. So I wouldn't trade weight this book because I think it would be frustrating for folks to read and just see the same kind of the same thing over and over again. I think it gets frustrating. I think it works better in a dose every couple of weeks. Is this a bi-monthly?
I believe so. Yeah, it's coming out pretty quick. So like almost every other week right now. The thing I've never really figured out with people who read on the trade side, just because my reading habits aren't that way, is again, like you said, you've got the repetition when they collect certain things that way. They could get annoying. But then how do you keep up the story momentum having read a six-issue arc and then waiting a couple of months to get anything? Read another six-issue arc, another couple of months, you know? It seems like it's very much feast or famine.
Yeah, I think that would be tough. For me, you know, I read a lot of trades with Walking Dead, but they were so far ahead that I had plenty to keep me busy. And I didn't have to wait a long time between trades. But that wouldn't be the case now if you are waiting for these three or four issues to be collected. And then and Marvel's much better at putting them out much more quickly than DC.
Oh, yeah.
If you were a DC trade waiter, it'd be agony.
Well, and I think the faster pace of release on the monthly side or the periodical side, because, I mean, again, it's like every other week with some of these titles, means you're only going, like, maybe 3 months between trades or something. And I think it really would depend on just how strong the story is and the story momentum, and just, again, how long the wait is between the trades as to how well it worked, and also how much you read.
Yeah.
With the amount I read, it might be difficult. With the if I read fewer titles, it might not be a big deal at all. To me, 4 out of 5, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the Battle of the Atom and where all of that goes and how and if this plays into the whole breaking of the space-time continuum, because this is, of course, one of the major violations currently going on there.
I'm a notch below you at a 3. It was a solid story, and I did enjoy it, but there was enough aspects of it that I did not like, and, you know, again, colored a little bit by the fact that I slogged through 8 through 14 to get here. Did not help.
Well, and the fact you refer to it as slogging through says a lot right there.
But if I would not have done that and read this on its own, it may have been a higher 3. But as it stands, it's a solid 3, and that's a good book.
I think for me, having read the previous issue, certainly colored my opinion a little on this, but as much from the fact that Stuart Immonen did the cover on this issue. I think if I'd done the same thing you had and had read the full couple, you know, previous arc and then gotten into this, I think having built up that momentum with that kind of pacing, storytelling style, and art style, and then hitting this issue, I could see where that might have bumped my rating down too.
Yeah.
I definitely think the way people read a book, what they've read prior to it, the baggage they bring, totally impacts how they perceive it. It's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just the way it is. Shall we move on to our other book for the week?
Yeah, Sidekick number 1.
This is part of Joe's Comics from Image. It's J. Michael Straczynski. I have very mixed feelings on Straczynski's writing. I'm a huge, huge fan of Babylon 5. I thought it was brilliant. I don't know that he's ever gonna top that, in my opinion. He's done some other good stuff. But so much of his comic book work at times has felt like he's, like, trying to impress me with how much smarter he is than the average reader or something. And he's a smart guy, and he's a really good writer, no question about that. But there's a, you didn't understand the true origin of Spider-Man or the Fantastic Four or whomever. Let me show you how it really is. That seeps through his writing at times. So, again, I walked into this wondering, is I going to love it, hate it, or what? And this was not his best writing. It was not his worst writing. Frankly, I found it a bit of a downer and fairly depressing in places. And, I mean, I've got the next issue on order, but at this point, I don't know if I'm going to pre-order the third issue. And frankly, up until the final scene, if I hadn't pre-ordered the second, up until that last scene, I would not have pre-ordered it. The last scene has me just enough curious about the next issue and where this is going to turn it around. But I think, in my opinion, he's in a bit more of a recovery mode than I'm hooked. And after a first issue, I don't know that that's a great place to have a reader wind up.
Well, you may have read a lot of superhero deconstruction books.
Yes.
I haven't read a lot of them. So I kind of enjoyed this take on a different way of looking at superheroes. You could definitely feel his animosity towards sidekicks in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of reiterates that when you get to the letters page at the back about the misery and horrible things he's going to be doing to this character in the 12-issue series. And I definitely felt Sidekick's Flyboy's misery throughout this. But I also feel for him and want... I know he's got some despicable characteristics, but I'm rooting for him, and I want to see where this goes. I definitely want to read another issue, and I was a little bit I was on the other side about that last page that I didn't like, because I was assuming we were going to get one thing, and then they kind of brought something back in that I thought was going to be long gone from the series.
Well, that last scene was definitely a game changer. But for me, having read a lot of deconstruction of superhero type things, deconstruction of sidekicks and stuff before, I didn't feel like he really brought anything new to the table in this issue. So that game changer, to me, has the potential of helping it rather than hurting it.
How about when the sidekick, quote-unquote, arrests the prostitute? That was new.
Go read Brat Pack.
Not new, then.
Not new. Brat Pack was done by, I think it was Veitch. I'm not sure which publisher back in the day. I hope it's still in trade. It was essentially a version of the Teen Titans, but a much more dark, mature reader's version of the Teen Titans. What we got here was tame in comparison to some of what we got in stories like that.
One thing I did not like was the Kickstarter little couple of pages there. I thought that was very silly. Took me completely out of the book, and I had to kind of force myself back in. I thought that whole fundraising aspect was very silly, and didn't need to be in there. But for the most part, I really liked it. I saw a little bit of Watchmen in this.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, some of the early issues of Watchmen and that it had that feel kind of. So I'm looking forward to the next one and see, where we go from here.
I guess to me,
it's no Watchmen.
Certainly no Watchmen.
It's no Watchmen.
Which is funny, because I think Straczynski is capable of that level of writing. But it had the dystopic despair and downer aspects of that, I guess. This just felt so aimless. Or I guess the character felt so aimless. Which I guess is saying a good thing about the writer to have so successfully conveyed that. I'm curious where it goes next issue. Based on that, we'll determine if I keep going with it or not. Are you going to stick with it past that, or are you still in a wait-and-see mode?
I'm going to read a couple because I'm enjoying the sidekick's misery. What is that? Is that Schadenfreude? What's the word that the German word for loving someone else's misery? So I mean, I'm really enjoying that. So I'm going to be along for the ride for a little bit, and I love 10 Grand a lot. So this is a companion book for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Are you usually in favor of the concept of sidekicks, or do you think they're kind of ludicrous?
I'm usually anti-sidekick.
Okay. I'm more kind of, yes, they're ludicrous, they're a product of their times, but if you accept that they're there, some of the stories they've told, I've always liked the Teen Titans as a group of characters, and stuff like that. So the sidekick, I don't have any problem with that concept of it. So when it's treated so, trying to think of a good way to phrase this, I don't want to say disrespectfully, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
Harshly.
he is kicking him while he's down, and
Oh,
we're
yeah.
along for the ride. But I don't mind. I gave him a little boot there myself.
I guess for me, I find that a little more depressing than anything else, so.
It's not a happy book, but there are a couple chucks and chuckles and yuck yucks throughout.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to give this a 3. I'm curious again what happens with that next issue and if that'll get it more to my liking and keep me on board or if that's all I'm going to read of it.
Yeah, I'm a 4, and I felt his misery. I can feel his desperation comes right off the page. So I am kind of anxious to see where this goes, and I'll definitely stick around for a few more issues.
Cool. Well, if I bail after the second, you may have to tell me if it's worth getting back on afterwards.
Yeah, I will.
Again, Straczynski's a great writer. This is as much a matter of the story he chose to tell, not really clicking with me as anything else. For me, this was a really, frankly, expensive week. It was a fairly large week, too. I got about 48, 50 things or whatever. No, actually, 46 items. I got the count right there. But it cost like over $200. Half of that was just 3 items, though.
Ah.
I got the Star Wars Complete Vehicles hardcover with all the cross sections and stuff like that. That was about $25. And then there are these high quality, high articulation action figures they do for in this case it was the Power Rangers, the Red and the Green Rangers, and those were insanely expensive, although actually cheaper than I can get them elsewhere. But these have like just again high detail and stuff. They're premium collector end toys. And they were about $40 each. So those 3 items, that was about half the cost. That's why I normally don't do high ticket items. It adds up too damn quickly.
Do you do that a lot? Do you have a like a toy room or something?
Yeah, I have more action figures than any man my age probably should. I've got a ton of them. But hey, I've got the income. It's not causing me financial problems, so I'm okay with it. I've read everything that came out. There were a couple of things that were interesting. I'm surprised they're doing the trying to turn Batwing around. I mean, I like what they're doing, but I just am going to be surprised if the title lasts, frankly, at this point, beyond the 0 year stuff.
Again, I like the backup, the Man Bat story better than Batwing.
Really interesting. Okay.
yeah I really I mean I don't it might all be old hat, but I don't know that story, so I've enjoyed it. I like what they're doing with his wife in the backup story. I thought that was really good, and I like that part of the book. It's not worth $4 for 10 pages, but I did like that bat in two issues in a row now, that I've read that I've really enjoyed that little backup story.
The one thing I want to kind of rant about just a little bit is the 5th issue of Cyberforce came out. This thing is crazy late. It was I think it was a December order code. Yeah, December 2012 order code. This is something that the Kickstarter for this, because this was one of those, they did a Kickstarter, they were going to do the 5 issues, send those out to the supporters, then get it out to the stores and so forth.
Yeah, I picked up one of the free ones that was in the store, if I recall.
This was also one of the free ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Kickstarter campaign ended like a year ago on August 17th, 2012. They hit the $75,000 target plus an additional $42,134. And having done that, it took a year to get this issue out to the stands. And I was kind of perusing through the comments section on their Kickstarter page, and it was late because of quote unquote art delays. It's like, dude, you got all the money you asked for and then some. And you had delays. You had plenty of time. They had told people it was going to ship on June 5th. Or actually, on June 5th, they said it was going to ship on the 17th. Or they'd post an update to the Kickstarter page. Well, obviously, it didn't ship then. It shipped a little bit later. They didn't update the page. You know, and there were many comments from people of like, well, when am I going to get this? Because I think some supporters still may not have gotten their physical copies. Because I think they were waiting for all five to get printed to ship them out, just so they didn't get killed on the shipping costs. Which makes sense, but message that out better. And the whole thing is, I mean, this was done by Top Cow. Top Cow knows how to produce comics. They should have known going in what they needed, how this was all going to work out, and have a good game plan. This doesn't really encourage me to fund comics on Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's not good.
Just because, I mean, it could be a year for... If it takes a year for the thing to get to completion and stuff from a company that's been in business 20 years, how can I expect a solo artist or creator or small company to do any better? Not to say they won't. I'm sure there are many that have been successfully funded and worked out wonderfully for everybody. I've heard a lot of success stories as well. But I was disappointed how late this was. It lacked story momentum entirely for me. And I'm really going to be curious when that sixth issue comes out, which will be the first one people have had to pay for at the stores, how that does. Because if you can't get readers hooked in five issues, oh, come on, you've had a shot.
But they need to be five issues that are consistently shipped.
Yeah.
So if they didn't get them out in a consistent shipping schedule, then...
So up front, they had all the money they thought they would need and almost half as much again, over half as much again.
Yeah.
So wasn't budgetary concerns. You know, that to me, they had everything working for them, and it seems to have stumbled. And I'm just kind of curious how and why that happened. Because, I mean, even if they hadn't started the art, I would have hoped they would have had the script done before they did the Kickstarter. And then when they get the money, they pull the trigger on the art. Okay, 5 months later, you should have had that fifth issue done.
I mean, I like the idea of Kickstarter, but those books should be done and in hand, and Kickstarter should be for printing, to offset printing costs. I mean, you shouldn't be doing Kickstarters to pay creators to write and draw. They should be done.
You know, on the one hand, I completely agree with you just because the time frame involved. I think that's the only respectful way to do that for the readers and the supporters. Flip side, part of the beauty of Kickstarter and part of where it really has a role in the industry is to allow for the funding of new content creation. But I agree with you that getting that money and then starting the whole creative cycle is both high risk and just too delayed of a gratification in most cases.
Yeah, you know, it's the guy who has great pitches for movies, but, you know, the script can never take shape, you know, there's no director attached, or, you know, it's in turnaround or something. You know, that's not enough to make a good movie. You need to be further along in the process, I think, than, oh, I have a great idea for a comic. Please send me $5 and I'll send it to you signed.
Mm-hmm.
Or $20, whatever the premium would be. And then I'll buckle down and we'll crank this out. I don't like that idea.
Well, and I think the premiums need to be better thought out. Certainly in this case, if you wanted to get those comics, I would have expected to have gotten them as they were being released, because there was nothing to really indicate otherwise. But I'll also admit, I have not done a whole lot with Kickstarter as a supporter. I've funded all of two projects, one of which is the Justice for Hire movie by a friend of the show, Jan Lucanis, which is based, you know, it's a concept he has also done a comic on, reviewed in an early episode of the Weekly Comics Spotlight. And what was great about the comic is it came with a DVD. And it's a martial arts kind of a premise or whatever, and you get some really cool action sequences on the DVD. So he wants to do a movie. It's like, yeah, I'll chip in some money to that, and I'm sure it'll be great. I know the guy. He's very entrepreneurial and energetic. So, you know, I have no doubt that I will see return on that investment and stuff. Granted, doing the movie is going to take a little time, but I get that.
Yeah.
And then the other was a software program for writing comic book scripts and whatever, just because it sounded cool, and it wasn't that much. But that also gets me into the beta cycle and can get feedback or whatever, whereas, again, some of the stuff, pay now, maybe you get it a year from now. That just seems like a good idea that has some kinks that need to still be kind of worked out to make it a lot more practical.
Yeah, agreed. And I want, yeah, if more people like have the experience that you have, then folks are going to sour on the whole idea of Kickstarter, and then the great ideas aren't going to get funded.
Well, I guess for me is tracking a project to, you know, do I actually get it a year from now if it takes that long? And in many cases, it's not a year, but 6 months or whatever. And frankly, will I still be interested in it then?
Yeah.
We'll see. Certainly at this point, I would not fund another Top Cow project.
Definitely not.
Them asking for $75,000 to do a comic they were probably going to do anyways seemed a little odd. But, you know, hey, it seems to have worked out for them. It got 5 free issues into my hands through the comics shops and gave that title a ramp-up that really no other title has had the opportunity to get. So we'll see if it can benefit from that.
Yeah.
So other than that, we got a bunch of superior Spider-Man titles this week. Carnage, Foes of Spider-Man, and Spider-Man. Good stuff. They continue to be knocking it out of the park with those things, by and large.
Superior Foes number 2... was just as good as number 1, mm-hmm. and answered the question that you had, are we going to get profiles or kind of starring vehicles for the other members of the Sinister 5/6, or is it going to be basically a Boomerang book? And basically we're going to have a Boomerang-led book, it seems to be, mm-hmm. with the other characters falling in place around him as supporting cast. And again, that worked well, very well. I loved the stuff with his parole office or parole hearing and the interactions with his lawyer and some of the visual aspects of the storytelling where there's really no dialogue needed. Some of the stuff with the fast guy, is that Speed Demon?
Speed Demon, yeah.
Yeah, when he runs away but forgets his doggy bag and comes back.
Yeah, I thought that was, yeah.
Just that this laugh out loud funny stuff in there. And this is a good companion book for, you know, for Hawkeye. If you like Hawkeye, you love this book, I think. It's got that same kind of humor.
Yeah, same sort of sensibility. It's told a little bit differently. And again, it's a team book of villains versus just Hawkeye or whatever. But it's one that I really hope sticks around long enough to kind of find an audience, because I think it's going to be similar to Hawkeye, where a lot of people didn't necessarily flock to it at the beginning. But, I mean, that second trade for Hawkeye topped the trades chart in July. So, I mean, they've got a definite hit on their hands in that respect. And, again, Marvel's doing a lot of really good stuff kind of across the board, some of which is getting noticed, some of which isn't getting as noticed yet. But if they can hang in there for long enough for it to get its shot, they could have a really strong lineup.
Mm-hmm. I read The Bunker by Josh Fielkov, which is a digital-only comic that came out this week.
Okay.
And he did iVampire and Alpha Big Time, and it was a really great debut. And it has the same landscape presentation as the Private Eye digital comic that Brian K. Vaughan is doing. And it's not going to be available for print. It's only going to be available through Comixology or through thebunker.com, thebunkercomic.com. But the premise is a group of friends are on their way to bury a time capsule, as friends do.
Mm-hmm.
And they stumble across a bunker, a la Lost, you know. And on the bunker's lid their names are engraved on the bunker's lid. And when they get inside, there are letters from their future selves telling them of what they're going to become and the roles they're going to play in this apocalyptic event that is coming, and how each of them is a part of this event and the devastation that occurs because of it. And then they have to live with this information and go forth. And that's what we're given. We're given this, and this is set. And there's some really interesting, because one of the characters doesn't have a letter, and so he's not there, and not part of this. But he was there, but he's not
right.
Part of
in the bunker, but doesn't know he doesn't have his future laid out.
He doesn't have the same role, so it's kind of intriguing as to what what's going on there. The art's really cool. It's very stark. It's black and white. It's a $1.99 book. I recommend it. It's a really great debut. There's not a lot of stuff like this out there. I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm looking forward to whenever the next one comes out. Fyalkov said every month or so. So to look for the next issue. I'm looking forward to this one, and I recommend it. It's a really good read.
Sounds interesting. Sounds like a good concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really great concept. I also picked up, RoboCop Last Stand number one, which is, Frank Miller inspired book written by Stephen Grant. I guess it's based on his unproduced screenplay for RoboCop 3.
Oh, okay.
And I probably watched RoboCop as a kid about 100 times. So I really love that movie. And, this is kind of after the fact, and the police force is not around anymore. The people of Detroit are being kind of moved out, displaced for big business to come in and rebuild things. There's the Ed 209 robot that makes an appearance, and that the evil corporation is involved in a lot of different things and has their fingers in things. And our old buddy RoboCop is the only guy working for the people. He's on the run from everyone. So it was a really cool first issue. I believe this is an 8-issue miniseries, and it had a really good gritty feel, reminiscent of Frank Miller. So he didn't draw the book, but it had that grit to it, and it was really good. I didn't expect much from it, but it was very good. And for licensed properties, I don't think I've been giving them their chance. Because between this and Star Wars and some of the other ones that I've read, there's some really quality books out there.
There is. There are a couple that are not so great, but really a lot of the licensed properties these days, by and large, are being really well done. IDW does a great job with their stuff, by and large. Dynamite often does, but I'll admit there are a couple that they've kind of cranked out. Frankly, I'm going to say The Bionic Man right now. Good, but not as great as it could and I would like it to be. Certainly not one I would hold up as, wow, this is the best licensed thing out there. But yeah, some of these other properties, again, what they're doing with the Star Trek stuff over at IDW. If you're not getting it because, oh, it's a licensed property, I would just want the original. Fine, that's a viable choice, I guess, but it just seems like you're skipping some quality material.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff Lemire's Trillium number one came out from Vertigo, and this was a cool concept with how it is packaged. It's a flip book, and I started with the space side. I really like the idea of this, and what he was going for was very ambitious. For me, it was a little muddled. I didn't think it was a great first issue. And I'll probably read the second one just because, not because of how great the first one was, but just because just to see if it gets a little better. I don't know what you felt, how you felt about it.
I didn't read that one, actually. I didn't get it.
Oh, you didn't get Trillium?
Nope. Okay.
When you're all in on DC, I can understand you've got to be picky with the Vertigo stuff.
Well, I think a lot of it is just historically Vertigo has been more in the supernatural, the horror, the darker, more mature stuff than I frankly tend to care to read. You know, I've dabbled in aspects of it, and there have certainly been some various Vertigo titles I've loved, but it's never been an imprint where I've gone anywhere close to all in on. I'm probably getting more Vertigo titles these days than really at almost any point in the past.
Shelter number two came out, and one of the I have a little beef with Shelter number two, because at the beginning, there's a little recap, and on the page, I think the second paragraph of that intro page, it gives you previously in the book, you know, yada, yada, yada happened, and it was because of X, Y, and Z, and you knew blah, 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 and all these great plot points that I wish were in Shelter number one, but they weren't.
Wow.
But they're giving it to you in the previously page and giving you a little more depth and a little more information that would have been great if it would have been part of number one. And they're just saying it was part of number one.
That's part of
it's
why
kind
I always...
A cheat. It's a cheat for me, you know?
Oh, it's definitely a cheat, and that's part of why I've always considered those previously in pages to be a little bit of a writing crutch. You can revise history if you need to as to, well, I didn't really say this, but I meant to, so let me sneak it in here. And I'm not saying it's done intentionally.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I see the same thing on TV shows where I'll marathon a couple episodes, and they'll have something at the tail end of one. I watch the next, and literally, like, 5 minutes later, they're doing the previously on, if 5 minutes later, the previously on, and they're using, like, a different take from when they shot that scene, slightly different dialogue or whatever. And it's, no, wait, that's a different spin.
I guess the one line that bothers me the most is, what Victoria doesn't know is that the youth of Safe Haven have been secretly planning to mount a coup and overthrow their parents under the leadership of Lucas, a brash and charismatic teenager. Well, A, we didn't know Lucas was in charge. B, we didn't know it was a plan. You know, it just happened, and it was just in issue one. And you weren't able, there was nothing in there that told you that it was any kind of organized effort, I didn't think.
No, I didn't get that from the first issue either.
So that's no way to kick off, the second issue for me. And then this issue fell flat, I felt, anyway, and ended in an odd way that really didn't help want me to read anymore. So I think I'm bailing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Glad I skipped that one then.
Yeah. You did. You're out, right?
Yeah. The first was interesting, but not something that sold me on a future issue, nor did I feel I needed to come back for a future issue. Wasn't bad. It just wasn't the kind of story I felt I needed to read.
Yeah. I agree. And that's too bad, because Image has been doing some good stuff. So, but they're allowed a misstep, I guess, here and there.
Well, I think they're going to have as many missteps, if not more so, than successes, just the nature of Image.
Yeah.
Anybody can basically say, hey, I want to do this, and all they got to do is get approval from Image, and it goes through them.
Yeah.
You know, it's trivializing the process, of course, but some stuff is simply going to click better than others, and there's no editorial or content oversight from Image. That's what they bill as one of their strengths. You know, and at times it very much is one of their strengths. But there are also times where I think some of these creative teams, no matter how seasoned they may or may not be, somebody reading over the stuff and saying, hey, wait a sec, you know, you didn't really tell this part of the story well, or this recap doesn't match what actually happened in the past, and stuff like that. People would benefit from that as creators, but doesn't always happen.
Exactly. Daredevil Dark Knights number 3 finished up that first arc. I felt that was much improved over issue 2, and a good ending. I was pleasantly surprised and happy, you know, with that 3-issue arc, and
I liked the very end of it. It ended on a good note.
Yeah, it was great, that scene when he comes through the doors. That was great. Detective 23. I thought this was another solid book by John Layman. You know, after following up the annual, I thought this was solid again. And the rooftop fight, that was kind of hokey, but I was along for the ride. I enjoyed it. It was good, and I tried to find a citation about Layman leaving, and I can't find it. So I think that rumor was false, and maybe he is going to stick around. And I hope so, because if he's going to continue to put out quality books that and get a little better each time as he's writing this, then I want him to stick around, because we need some other strongly written Batman books.
Yeah. Well, and Wraith is an interesting character. He always has been. He was in a annual, I forget if it was Batman or Detective, back in, I think, the 80s, possibly as late as the 90s, but just showed up, and he was very much kind of Batman's opposite number. And I think what they're doing with the character here is just a lot of fun. It's very interesting. A little heavy-handed in a few places as to who he is, but Batman, of course, has already seen through that I don't say ruse, because it's so transparent to us as readers, but it's nice to have the hero see through it as quickly and stuff too. I'm curious again where they're going, and I think they're, again, telling some really strong stories just across a lot of the Batman titles.
Green Lantern 23, for me, this was kind of the weaker of the first three by the new creative team. It progressed okay, though, and I'm still I'm still around. I'm enjoying the little glimpses of the new recruits that I get to see. See, we didn't get much this issue, and that's kind of what I was hoping for, was more of them and maybe their training or their backstory and who they are, that they're coming in from all over. I'd kind of like a little bit more information on those guys. So maybe next issue.
Yeah, I'm getting the feeling that with the new creative teams on the Green Lantern titles, it's going to take them a couple issues to kind of find their way and really get into the groove. And I think in this case, bringing in the new recruits was almost a symbolic way of doing that. It gets some new characters in, so it's a point of view character for new readers or whatnot. But also kind of the, hey, we're new at this, we're feeling out how we want to take this franchise.
Yeah. That the next part of the Pandora event, the Phantom Stranger, was that number 2 or number 11?
Number 11 of Phantom Stranger. Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
After Justice League Dark, before Justice League of America 7, I believe. This is where this fits in. It was a very Vertigo type book.
Well, I mean, the character always has been, and frankly, I think it's one of their poor written books by and large.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally, you know, going to have great things happen. We're going to essentially reintroduce a lot of the Vertigo type characters back into the DCU, and we've gotten a little of that. But between actually being co-publisher of DC and stuff, Dan Didio, I don't think really has the time to devote to this that he may need to really tell a brilliant story. But also, out of all the stuff he's written at DC that I've read, and I think I have read all of it, if not, well, at least the vast majority of them, maybe not every single page of everything he's ever done there, but as far back as Superboy, his stuff on The Outsiders, and the stuff here, he's an okay writer. I think his time is better spent at the publishing, co-publisher level than in the trenches writing this book.
Yeah. There were some nice touches here. The afterlife experiences of Batman, I thought was really nice, and a nice glimpse that he allowed himself to have, a nice little moment he allowed himself to have. I thought that was nice, and that we got to see that. I thought that was a good touch. There was some good stuff in here.
There was, but it also was very much an aside to the Trinity War, that if you're just reading the Justice League books and you miss this, while you're missing those nice story beats and some fun stuff, there's nothing critical here that you have to have read.
No, you could have. Yeah, you could definitely skip this one and not miss anything. But it's part of the event.
That's part of the crossover. I wouldn't call Trinity War an event.
Yeah.
If it was hitting everything in the DC universe or the vast majority of it, I would say yeah. But I think there's a certain amount of...
It's event-ish.
It's crossing over the three Justice League titles, Constantine, Pandora, and Phantom Stranger. So it's a smaller scope than a Batman crossover. Now, again, nothing right or wrong about it. It's just, to me, terminology kind of matters at times.
Okay.
Did you read X-Factor?
No, I did not.
This was 260. It dealt with Quicksilver and Polaris. And we've got, I think, two more issues left before this run ends. I say this run because I'm starting to think we may get a new X-Factor after this. Maybe not a Peter David one, I don't know. But he's definitely, this is his kind of swan song, it seems like, where he's wrapping up loose ends and putting the characters, you know, to rest as he wants to. So it's fun stuff, worth reading, if you're into the characters.
And deservedly so, he should get that opportunity with that run. Hunger number 2. This was interesting because this was more, I have more Galactus here than I had in my ever, you know,
really?
Normally, whenever I've seen Galactus in a Silver Surfer book or a Fantastic Four story or something, and maybe I haven't read enough of those to know, but he usually just makes an appearance, somehow gets bested, and then fades away, you know, and you don't get a lot of, you don't seem to get a lot of interaction with him. And this was the stuff between him and Silver Surfer, and him talking about the yearning that he has and that is what his destiny is. I thought that was really good, and I hadn't known that story of the backstory of his before. And this is 616 Galactus and Ultimate Silver Surfer, or the other way around?
Yeah, no, you got it right. It's also the Galactus Swarm integrated into him as of the first issue. So he's now technically...
That's actually changed him? I thought they were...
A hybrid version or whatever.
Okay.
He's now connected with it, I guess would be the way to put it, or it's his new herald or whatever. It's telling some fun stuff. It's interesting. I think Galactus stories fall typically into two camps. One where he's kind of the threat, and it's very much like you described. There are others, and it tended to be more in the Silver Surfer title, among other places, where he's an actual character.
Ah.
And you get more interaction with him. And of course, hunger is going to lead to, I guess, cataclysm, and then it's a question of what, if anything, happens with the ultimate line after that. So, I'm liking what they're doing with hunger, but it's something that felt like it should have been an event, but so far most of the Ultimate Universe is like unaware of what's going on. So we'll see what happens.
Superior Spider-Man 15, of course, was another solid book. Yeah. I thought as well. The Ulrich character, I thought that was interesting, and the way he was throughout the book as both a kind of a foil, and then when as he is bested in only the way Otto could best someone is great and very satisfying. It's another solid issue from Slott on this one, and looking forward again to the next issue, which is what it's all about, you know.
Yeah,
send me into the next issue and keep going. It was really good, really solid stuff. I didn't read Superior Carnage. I didn't like the first one, and I had some advance information that the second one isn't any better from friends of mine who had read it, so I said, you know what, I'm going to just stay out.
It also wasn't any worse, and they moved the plot forward some. I think it's the weakest of the Superior titles by far, but the others are all really good. And I'm curious of what kind of carnage we're going to get out of this at the end. And frankly, the pacing of this, a little slow. But I'm enjoying it. They did some interesting stuff. But not something I can really go out and recommend unless somebody is a reader that must read every appearance of Carnage in any way, shape, or form. And I hope there's not too many of those.
maybe. Avengers AI number 2 was a different direction, I felt. It wasn't bad. I liked the whole Vision stuff. That was good. I don't know. I wanted more Doombot because he was kind of the best part of the first issue, but we got a little taste of him, but not much.
Yeah.
I don't know where this series is going.
That was going to be my point. It's fun, it's interesting, but it just seems to be scattershot and not changing direction, but hasn't found a direction. You know, what I thought I was going to get out of it based on the issue before it that set up Hank Pym was one thing. What I thought we were going to get out of it with the first issue was a little different. Now what I'm thinking we're going to get out of it, it hasn't gelled yet. It hasn't really solidified.
Yeah. And the last issue of Dial H, I liked it. And, you know, some of the things I liked about it were some of the things I liked about the series as a whole was, you know, a lot of the different dialed up characters that we got a glimpse of, and they're very creative in some of the superheroes that they come up with and the names and their powers. It got a little muddled, because it was a 42-page book and there was a battle that went on a little too long for me. But the ending, you know, had a nice ending at the end once it finally got there and left you with, you know, a little hope that they might do something down the road.
It ended the series gracefully.
Yeah, yeah.
It gave it a sense of conclusion, not necessarily finality. Like you said, we may see these characters later. But it wasn't just the series is over, so go see them over here.
Yeah.
Like we got with, like, Hawkman and a few others.
Yeah, so that's that. So much for Dial H.
Well, it went 15 issues, though, and I think that was... frankly, that's twice as long as almost, well, really, since it was double-sized issue, than some of the others went.
This was a Wave 2 title, though. And so, I just kind of hope, you know, I liked it a little better. It was earlier. It came out with Earth 2 and something else, right?
Earth 2, World's Finest, and I forget what the, actually, there were, six in that that batch. Men of War, I think it was, ended after 8 issues. I think Batman Inc. was also part of that wave.
Yeah.
But between delays and stuff like that, it had lower issue numbers.
Okay.
I could be wrong on that, though.
Okay. So there's a World's Finest is the only thing left. Well, Earth 2 is still around.
Earth 2 and World's Finest are the two survivors.
Yeah, and Earth, this issue of Earth 2 was, I dipped back in hoping there'd be more Batman since we got him in.
I've been disappointed with that. We get teased in the annual and we haven't seen him since.
Yeah, that was.
And I think the change in writers has kind of kicked that series into a awkward state right now. It's.
Yeah, and I don't know if I want to stick around to see what happens anymore. It's just really losing me, I don't know if I would really be worse for wear if I wasn't reading this. So I think this might be it for me.
I can understand that. I think that's too bad. I think once Tom Taylor gets on board as writer, hopefully it'll start gelling again. But it's lost its way right now. But I think they're potentially between the creative team shakeup and behind the scenes stuff, potentially that may be part of it. But on the one hand, they're getting the trains to run on time, the stuff's coming out. But
yeah, that's true.
If it's losing readers, you know, how much does getting it out help sometimes? I guess it's a no-win situation.
Exactly. For me, that's my week. I didn't read anything else.
I read a ton of other stuff. The two Atomic Robo titles, that's always great stuff. Buck Rogers I thought was interesting, very much kind of a back-to-basics approach on that character. What else was worth commenting on?
Did you read Satellite Sam number 2 yet?
I did not. Didn't read the first one. Didn't. Okay. Don't get the title.
It's still sitting there. I haven't read that one yet. Looking forward to reading that and see if it's any better.
Got the second issue of The Owl. People who are fans of Project Superpowers, this is one of those characters. And it's kind of a Batman-type character having, again, stuck in the urn and move forward 50 years. Liking that. And I really like the second issue of Quantum and Woody. So, all in all, very strong week. Good stuff.
I heard good things about the latest Green Arrow also, but I haven't had a chance to read that one.
I read it. I liked it. It didn't strike me as particularly stronger than the previous few issues.
Mm-hmm.
No weaker either. That's one where I think they're trying to reestablish the title. And they're doing a fine job with that. It's just, what are they going to reestablish it as, I guess, is the question.
Now, Quantum and Woody, number 1 and number 2, if I haven't read another Valiant book, am I okay?
Oh, yeah. Totally self-contained.
And it's a worthwhile title to check out the Valiant universe and their style. You recommend that?
I'm not going to say it's representative of the line. It always seemed to be kind of its own offshoot side thing. And still seems to feel that way to me now. It's got a different art style than most of the other books. So it's worth reading. Is it indicative of what you'd get in the other books? No, I don't think so. Not better or worse, just different.
I've been thinking about trying something from Valiant. And this
if you want a buddy superhero comic that's a bit, I don't want to say slapstick-ish, but more comedic or whatever, Quantum and Woody's a good way to go. If you want something more Punisher-like or something like that, Bloodshot's good to go, title. Something more Iron Man-like, Exo Manowar. And Archer and Armstrong's excellent title. I would actually probably start with that title.
They're all 14, 15, on issue 14 or 15?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Archer and Armstrong recently had a 0 issue. You could start with that and then get on to the current story arc. So you could get on board without having to go all the way back. But I always recommend going all the way back. I just think that's the right way to read a story.
It is. It is. That's how they draw it up.
Yep. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That will do it.
Cool. Join us next week for World's Finest number 15 from DC, Infinity number 1 from Marvel, and East of West number 5 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.